It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. U.S. officials say a video in which Yemen's al-Qaeda branch claims responsibility for last week's deadly attack in the French satirical newspaper Charlie Hebdo is authentic. 12 people were killed. A third attacker, who killed 4 people at a kosher grocery store in Paris, claimed allegiance to the Islamic State group. Edward Uranian reports.
A video message from a leader of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula echoes what the attackers told witnesses in Paris, that they acted on behalf of al-Qaeda in Yemen. In the message posted online Wednesday, Nasser bin Ali al-Ansi says his group planned the assault on the offices of the Charlie Hebdo magazine by 2 French brothers, Saeed and Sharif Kouachi. Arab media reported that al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula had also claimed responsibility for a devastating suicide bombing against the Yemeni police academy the same day as the Paris attacks. It has not been determined if the attacks were coordinated. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
France announced it is increasing participation in anti-Islamic State airstrikes by sending its flagship aircraft carrier to the Middle East. A human rights group released satellite images said to show the destruction in northeastern Nigeria caused by militant group Boko Haram. Amnesty International says the photos show an estimated 3,700 structures were burned down soon after Boko Haram seized control of Baga and nearby Doron Baga on January 3rd. The rights group also says the militants shot hundreds of civilians, including children. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry spent all day Wednesday in Geneva talking about Iran's nuclear program with Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif. The talks came before diplomats from Britain, China, France, Germany, Russia, and the U.S. resumed their talks today with Iran, looking to reach a final deal by a July 1st deadline. Federal agents in the United States have arrested a man from the Midwestern state of Ohio for allegedly plotting to set off bombs at the U.S. Capitol and shoot employees in and around the building. Christopher Cornell was arrested Wednesday moments after buying a weapon at a Cincinnati, Ohio gun store. He was charged in a federal court with weapons possession and attempting to kill a U.S. government officer. Court documents say Cornell believed the attack would show support for Islamic State and that he had been in contact with persons overseas relating to his plot. The U.S. House of Representatives voted to extend funding for domestic security operations while blocking President Obama's executive order, shielding millions of undocumented immigrants from deportation. VOA's Michael Bowman has details.
The Republican-led House voted to fund the Department of Homeland Security for the remainder of the fiscal year, something lawmakers of both parties support. But the bill came with amendments designed to prevent the agency from complying with the president's unilateral actions on immigration. Senate passage of the bill is viewed as questionable, and Republicans do not have the votes that would be required to override a presidential veto. The Department of Homeland Security is funded into next month, while the rest of the federal government has been funded through September. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Indonesia's National Search and Rescue Agency says divers today will try to reach the main section of the AirAsia flight wreckage, where most of the bodies are believed to be located. The fuselage was found in the Java Sea, 3 kilometers from the tail section and 800 meters from where the black box recorders were found earlier. The Airbus jet crashed December 28th with 162 people on board. 50 bodies have been recovered so far. Pope Francis travels today to the Philippines, Asia's only majority Roman Catholic nation, where he will celebrate an outdoor mass with a crowd expected to be several million people. On Wednesday, Pope Francis called for unity and forgiveness during a sermon in Sri Lanka's war-torn north. Tens of thousands from across the country's religious and ethnic divide gathered to hear his message. Pope Francis in the Philippines on Manila on Sunday. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Mori Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. James Abate, Washington. Today is Thursday, January 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Senegal bans the distribution of the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, but an analyst says President Macky Sall is covering up for his political mistakes.
Nobody will really back up or support the killing of whoever in the name of Islam, of course. But they will not neither accept people to mock their religion or their prophet.
Abdullo is a Senegalese political analyst. A Nigerian activist welcomes calls for peaceful election. Satellite images show the extent of Boko Haram devastation in the town of Doram Bagha. And the United Nations says Libya is on the brink of chaos.
The general impression is that the country is very close to total chaos, and that if they miss this opportunity, it's very difficult to imagine that there will be a situation in a country that will allow easily to start a new process.
Bernardino Leon is the UN mediator on Libya. He'll tell you why gangs in the Central African Republic are turning to gardening, and two young girls fight back to end child marriages in Zimbabwe. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's portion and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Senegal's government has reportedly banned the distribution of Wednesday's edition of the French satirical weekly magazine Charlie Hebdo and the Daily Liberation. Both publications carry a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad on their Wednesday's front pages. The Senegalese news agency, citing a statement from the Interior Ministry, said it is forbidden to distribute and disseminate by any means today's edition of the French magazine Charlie Hebdo and the French newspaper Liberation throughout the national territory. But Senegalese political analyst Abdou Lo said banning the distribution of the magazine is a political cover for President Macky Sall, because Senegalese Muslims, who make up 95% of the population, had been angered with the president for marching in Paris.
I think it's more political positioning for themselves, because, as you may know, President Macky Sall went to Paris to rally with François Hollande and many head of state and government. And it was not very well seen in this country, because people could not understand why our head of state, especially African ones, did not rally for Nigeria against Boko Haram, or why did not they organize anything from Northern Mali and rushing to Paris to say, yes, we are for freedom of speech. Number two reason is, for a country such as Senegal, where you have 95% of Muslims and 4% of Christians, which is 99% of believers, people cannot understand Macky Sall going to back a magazine that is mocking openly religions, be they Christians, Muslims, whatever. So it's for him a big loss in terms of sympathy regarding the religious leaders here in the country and the national opinion.
If I hear you, you are saying that Senegalese, most of whom are Muslims, were angry.
95%, yeah.
95% Muslim were angry with the publication itself.
Yes, people could not understand. They're against the killing of the Kakinis, of course, because the Islam we have in this country is very tolerant, very open, because we live peacefully with Christians and animists. But people cannot understand a news magazine mocking up the prophet here, and Macky Sall going to back up that magazine, sort of, you know. That creates a big misunderstanding. So, frankly, there is no reason for him to ban it, because that newspaper doesn't exist in this country. Do you understand?
So why is that political now? If there's no reason, then why is it political?
The fact of going to France saying that I am Charlie means, okay, so you are with those who are mocking our religion, those who are mocking our prophet.
What do Muslims there in Senegal feel about the incident that took place in Paris where the journalists were killed? Do they support that, or they just...
Nobody is supported here in this country. That's not the type of Islam we have in Senegal. We have a different Islam. There is no Salafist, there is no Wahhabi. We have a Sufi Islam. That means we go through guides in here. We make a difference here between what is religion and what is cultural. So nobody will really back up or support the killing of whoever in the name of Islam, of course. But they will not neither accept people to mock their religion or their prophet. So that's where I think Macky Sall had made a mistake by going and demonstrating on the name of Charlie Hebdo or whoever. It had been seen by Senegalese people as a sort of challenging their faith.
Abdullah is a Senegalese political analyst and general manager of Primum Africa Consulting. He was speaking with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Civil society organizations in Senegal are calling on the government to rewrite a new draft law that aims to modernize Islamic schools in the country and end the forced child begging that occurs in some of the schools. According to Amnesty International Senegal Director Sidi Gassama, there are 20,000 child beggars in Dakar alone and up to 50,000 in the entire country. Gassama tells Ricky Schreier that an estimated 91% of those child beggars are students from the Islamic schools.
There is a draft law from the government that sets the legal framework for the Daira, which means Islamic Quranic schools. You don't have problem with that law. It's a very progressive law. But we know that if that law is passed as it is, it will never be applied because Quranic schools, teachers will never abide by that law, because that law means simply the end of traditional Daira. The law is basically introducing what we call here in Senegal Franco-Arab, which means schools that teach both in French and Arabic. It also implies that teachers should complete the high school in Arabic, which is not the case for many of current Daira teachers who basically just read Al-Quran, but most of them don't understand the Arab language.
So it's not the fact that the draft law talks about child begging that you think will be the problem?
The new Daira means no more child begging.
But the law currently says no child begging, correct?
Yes, it means no child begging because the state will be subsidizing the school. But before, for a school, the new Daira to be subsidized, that means it should teach the official state program, which is not the case currently. You should have at least 50 students in your school, which many Dairas don't have. That's the big problem, the problem of grades for many teachers and the problem of numbers of school attendees.
When is this law set to be voted on in the National Assembly?
We don't think that currently the law will go to the National Assembly because there is a lot of rejection from Quranic school all over the country. What we are calling for is for the government to pursue the discussion, consultation with civil society, with the Quranic school teachers, with also the marabouts in this country. If you don't find a consensus, the law will never be applied. And the state will be absolutely powerless against these people who are supported by very powerful religious lobbies. We should make sure that the basic freedoms, which mean ending corporal punishment in the schools, which mean ending child begging, should definitely be preserved in this law. But other aspects definitely should be open to discussion.
Why do you think modernizing Daras will help in child begging if it already is illegal?
Because the state will be subsidizing the schools that meet the criteria set up by the state in the law. Nothing.
Sidi Gassama is Amnesty International Senegal director. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. A prominent civil rights activist has called on Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan and his main challenger, General Muhammadu Buhari, to ensure that their supporters refrain from violence in the run-up to the February 14 presidential and gubernatorial elections. Ishaya Bajama is the leader of the JAR Consensus and Coalition Forum, a civil society organization. His comments came after both President Jonathan and retired General Buhari jointly called for peaceful elections at a workshop on violence held Wednesday in Abuja.
At least to those who listen to these two prominent candidates, it sends a policy statement that we are not interested in violence. That at that level, it serves some purpose, but it will not be a conclusive solution to the problem. I would suggest, apart from signing this, they need to go back to their political groups and emphasize this and put a structure that can ensure what they are saying is acceptable and is complied with.
You are aware that a lot of these politicians have the notion that it's all or nothing. They have to win the election at all costs. Do you think that the signing of this agreement and what you are calling for at the local level would have any impact at all on these politicians who, some will say, are hell-bent in winning the election at all costs?
The whole issue is that Even after winning election, the government runs as a party government rather than citizens' government. The politicians need to assure people that it's not winner takes all. And some form of unity government need to be introduced irrespective of who wins. If from the national level to the state level, there should be some level of inclusiveness, party inclusiveness, in running the government of each of the states and at the national level. The more it is emphasized, the more it is mainstream, the more it might reduce the psyche of some of these people.
The yes. Electoral Commission, INEC, yes. has re-registered over 10 million prospective voters that will be participating in this election. What are yes. your thoughts? Because some are suggesting that this is yet another plot to rig the election. What is your take?
Some level of trust needs to be built with governance. Because a lot of times, even when people come with the best of intention, people write them off from the face value and begin to suspect. The electoral body is trying to explain itself as to how far it's trying to be as honest as it can be. We should push for them to be better at what they are doing, and we should also have some level of trust in what they are doing, and we should participate in the process of checkmating wherever the gaps are. Some of these things are often tolerated by citizens at certain level, including opposition or party, whatever. Corruption is not in one line only. We all have to watch it as all citizens. If it becomes just INEC or government of the day or opposition, it doesn't solve the problem.
Ishaya Bajaman is the leader of the JAG Consensus and Coalition Forum, a civil society organization. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Katsina in Nigeria. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Thursday, January 15th. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. A new round of UN-mediated peace talks on Libya has begun amidst warnings that the country is on the brink of chaos. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the meeting in Geneva.
UN mediator Bernardino Leon does not appear to be overly concerned by the absence of some members of the Libya Dawn faction. He says he is hopeful they will join the talks when they vote whether or not to participate on Sunday. In the meantime, Leon says other members of the group and representatives of the internationally recognized government are attending the meeting. Two rival governments have been fighting for control of Libya since former dictator Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown 3 years ago. Western countries are increasingly concerned about instability in Libya spilling over into a wider conflict in the Mediterranean and Europe. Mediator Leon tells VOA Libya is running out of time. He notes the governor of the central bank says the financial and economic collapse of the country may be just days or weeks away. He says terrorist attacks are increasing and fighting is intensifying.
You put together all these elements, the picture is really very difficult. How many opportunities, how much time will Libya have to react if they miss this opportunity? It's difficult to say, but the general impression is that the country is very close to total chaos, and that if they miss this opportunity, it's very difficult to imagine that there will be a situation in a country that will allow easily to start a new process.
Leon says the goals are to stop the fighting and reach a political settlement acceptable for all Libyans.
This is a process. This is going to take time. We are not expecting have a breakthrough tomorrow or day after tomorrow. There is a gap between the parties, which is becoming more complicated. There is more fighting on the ground, so we will try to facilitate these talks and to help them to reach common ground, but it is not going to be easy.
Leon says the talks are indirect. The parties will not engage in face-to-face negotiations, and he will shuttle between the rival groups and begin working on confidence-building measures. He says this round is expected to end Friday, and private bilateral meetings are likely to take place during the weekend. Leon says he expects talks to resume either Monday or Tuesday. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says the Central African Republic needs to find more work for young people if it wants to avoid further violence. As VOA's Nick Long reports from Bangui, the agency is working to show how gardening can be a career opportunity for youth involved with armed groups.
In a village 26 kilometres north of Bangui, drummers welcome FAO workers who have come to see how a group here is working to grow watermelons and other produce. Villagers say until recently, gardener Levi Kulbe was the head of a group of anti-balaka, a militia from mainly Christian communities. The anti-balaka started out as self-defence groups, but are increasingly regarded as bandits.
Je suis l'un des anti-balaka. Je suis venu de la brousse. Arrivé à Bangui, personne s'en occupait de nous. On souffre vraiment, il n'y avait plus rien.
Kulbe says he is one of the anti-balaka who came from the bush, and when they got to Bangui, no one looked after them, so they suffered. Now he is grateful that one of his relatives, Louis Koro, advised them to join this farmers' group and learn gardening. As for payment, Kulbe says they were told they might each get about $6.50 a day, but so far they are not being paid that. But he says he is glad to be learning gardening as he thinks it will be profitable for him in future. The president of this gardeners' group, Louis Koro, confirms there is not much pay.
Payer, c'est trop dit. On partage les miettes qu'on a.
To say the workers are paid would be an overstatement, he says. We have to admit there is no salary, but we share the crumbs that we have. Sometimes the workers get coffee, plantains, taro and so forth. Gardening can be particularly profitable around Bangui, where a kilo of watermelon sells for more than $2, and Koro does sometimes pay the workers. Isaias Koro is another ex-anti-balaka in the group. He says he is better off gardening than manning a checkpoint for the anti-balaka, as these days the vehicles do not pay anything at the checkpoints. The militia can only shake down pedestrians carrying bundles of wood and women carrying farm produce. He explains it has become harder to erect roadblocks around Bangui as the French or UN peacekeepers soon dismantled them. As a result, he was getting less than a dollar a day in the anti-balaka, whereas working as a gardener, he is fed and sometimes gets $2 a day. Syriac Bondo is another of the ex-anti-balaka turned gardener. He tells VOA he was making about $5 a day with the anti-balaka, but he prefers working for Louis Koro's association because he can also work for other villagers who also pay him. Working for the association may not pay much, but because Koro is an influential man locally, he enables the ex-anti-balaka to be accepted by the community, despite crimes they may have committed. This year, the Food and Agriculture Organization aims to start what it calls farmer field schools in villages across the country. These are regular meetings of farmers who want to work together and learn together, something like Koro's association. FAO says farmer field schools can help integrate ex-combatants into village life. The idea is not to give them preferential treatment, but to encourage the inclusion of marginalised young people so that villagers can accept them. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
Two teenagers approached Zimbabwe's constitutional court yesterday seeking an order to declare child marriages illegal and unconstitutional. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from the capital, Harare.
In papers presented before the full constitutional court bench, Loveness Mudzuru and Ruimbotso Potgwa, who were married before the age of 18, argue that early marriages violate the country's new constitution. Their attorney, Tendai Biti, told the court that Section 22 of the Marriages Act that recognizes 16 years as the legal age of consent violates Section 78 of the new Supreme Law of the Nation, which stipulates that anyone who has reached the age of 18 has a right to have a family.
There is a problem in Zimbabwe of early marriages. One in three Zimbabwean women is marrying before below the age of 18. Of those one in three, 25% are in fact being married or being impregnated before the age of 15. So these are young children. So what we are trying to do is to say that there can be no marriage, no union before someone reaches the age of 18.
Biti said the section also breaches Article 56 of the Constitution, which provides for equal protection and benefits of the law. He added that the absence of a law that is consistent consistent with the new constitution is resulting in increased child marriages in the country.
The thing is, most of these girls who get into these marriages come from poor backgrounds. So you've got a situation of a child carrying a child, educational attainments are curtailed, empowerment opportunities are curtailed. So it then becomes a continuous cycle of poverty.
But State Attorney Olivia Zwedi, who was representing Vice President and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, argued that the new constitution is vague when it makes a direct reference to marriages. Before adjourning, Chijigal Siku announced that the court was reserving its judgment on the matter. Reacting to the case, Director Beatrice Savage of the Reopening Opportunities for Transformation Support, or ROOTS, said her organization saw it fit to take up Mudzuru and Tsopodzwa's matter after realizing that child marriages are on the rise in Zimbabwe. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports news, here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with cycling. Rwanda's Valence Ndayisenga won the 8-kilometer prologue stage of the Tour of Egypt in Hurghada on the Egyptian Red Sea coast on Wednesday. Spain's Perez Mancebo was runner-up ahead of Rwanda's Yanvier Hadi. The Tour of Egypt has attracted cyclists from Africa and Europe. It's the first event on the 2015 UCI Africa Tour calendar. Eritrea's 23-year-old Mekseb Debesse is Africa's top-ranked cyclist. Moving on to football, Africa lost a long-serving football administrator, Slim Alulu of Tunisia, who passed away after a long illness in the Tunisian capital Tunis on Wednesday. A former Tunisia Football Federation head, Alulu served on the FIFA Under-20 World Cup Organizing Committee and CAF Committee for Legal Affairs. On a more cheerful note, South Africa wrapped up their preparations for their Orange Africa Cup of Nations campaign on a high with a resounding 3-0 triumph over Mali in Libreville, Gabon, on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Ivory Coast plays Sweden in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. South Africa and Ivory Coast arrive in Equatorial Guinea tomorrow, Friday. Staying with the Nations Cup, the national teams of Ghana, Republic of Congo, Burkina Faso, Tunisia, and the Democratic Republic of Congo arrived in Equatorial Guinea on Wednesday. Cape Verde Islands were the first team to jet in on Tuesday. Today, Thursday, Algeria and Zambia are set to arrive for the tournament. Turning to handball, African champion Algeria play Egypt in Group C action as Tunisia engage Macedonia in a Group B tie at the start of their campaign at the Men's World Handball Championship in Doha, Qatar tomorrow, Friday. On Saturday, Tunisia play Croatia, while on Sunday, Algeria face Iceland as Egypt challenge France. Finally, in table tennis, a potential men's singles final between Nigeria's African champion Haruna Quadri and Egypt's El Sayed Lashin looks set to be the draw card at the Africa Senior Table Tennis Championships in Cairo starting next week. Republic of Congo, Nigeria, and Egypt are expected to dominate the medal table. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Tanzania's government has declared a ban on witchcraft in an effort to halt deadly attacks on albinos. The move follows mounting pressure on the government to protect albinos who lack pigment in their skin and hair and whose body parts are used by witch doctors in so-called magic potions thought to bring power and health. And that's it for this Thursday, January 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotte and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer Jimmy Koch, I'm James Butler in Washington wishing you a good day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked. VOA Africa. Don't miss.